We'll begin with our opening prayers as usual. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So welcome everyone. If you've come for the meditation class, you have to wait an hour. You can meditate. You can meditate in this class if you doze off. I won't be offended. Thank you. But those of you who were not here for the announcement on New Year's Day, we're going to start a new year, a new beginning with a new text. And this is the text, Sri Prashnottara Ratnamalika, that we've chosen for teaching. And first class, you have to forgive me because first time I'm teaching hardcore Vedanta. Actually, I shouldn't say hardcore Vedanta, some Vedanta. So I have no idea how much time I will take on each verse. I don't even know how many verses we'll cover. So it's going to be a learning curve for me. And eventually, by the end of the course, I think we'll get there. So some of the material that you might see in the class, many of you who've been coming here for a long time probably know some of the stuff already. But I just thought as a refresher for most of us, it would be good to just go over some basics in most of the texts that we study. So the Vedantic texts are broadly divided into three. And they're called Prasthana Traya. Traya means three. And they are the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutra. The Upanishads, there are about 108 Upanishads and 10 major Upanishads that most Vedantic students end up studying. And the reason for it is because there is commentaries written on these 10 major Upanishads. And the Upanishads, so this is one way to classify the text. There are many different ways as well, but this is one of the common ways. The Upanishads really are considered to be the Shruti texts, meaning these were revealed. The words of the Upanishad is not written by any one person. They were revealed to the rishis, or they were heard. Shru literally means to hear, and by extension, these were revealed words or revealed texts. The Bhagavad Gita. We all know the Bhagavad Gita, but there are about 28 to 30 Gitas in our scriptures. The Bhagavad Gita is the most commonly studied, only because it has a very direct implication on how we live our lives. So Bhagavad Gita is very popular. Many years back, I remember... I think it was in a children's class or some class I remember hearing someone asking, what is the Bible for Hinduism? And someone answered, Bhagavad Gita. I wouldn't call it a Bible because Bible was really doesn't quite give the sense of what the Bhagavad Gita is. The Bhagavad Gita and the other Gitas are part of the Smriti Grantha, Smriti texts, because they were heard, they were remembered, and then they were written down. And it's important to note that the Bhagavad Gita is really given it's one of the Prasthana Trayas, it's given the status of the Upanishads. And if you remember, every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it ends with, Om iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita su Upanishadsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre. So it gives you, it's telling you those verses, the last part, and then it gives you the title of the chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. It tells us that the Bhagavad Gita is really elevated to the status of the Shrutis, of the Shrutis, of the Upanishads. So it's you know, I hear students say, oh, I have listened to the Bhagavad Gita. I've listened to it, I've studied it. And then they move on. Listening one time, studying one time, is that going to be enough for the rest of our lives? Probably not. And I found it in my own personal experience. I have, you know, I've attended all, I think Swamiji has taught here 3 times or 4 times. And then many decades back, he used to go to Pennsylvania and Allentown to teach Bhagavad Gita there. And I would drive him at that time and I would be attending the classes there. I've attended Swami Paramarthananda's classes. I've attended Puja Swamiji's classes. And still, I feel I haven't even scratched the surface of the Bhagavad Gita, of what it really means to my life. And it's also important to know that every time we study the Bhagavad Gita, we are at a different stage in our own lives. So what situations we dealt with 15 years back may be very different from what we are dealing with today. So as we evolve, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, quote-unquote, evolve for our sake. So if you've studied the Bhagavad Gita once, excellent. If you never studied it, please start New Year, New Beginnings. If you've studied it a few times, very good, but not to let go of it. It's not a text we are studying. It's the essence of the teachings that is going to help us in our lives. And the third category of scriptures is the Brahma Sutra, also known as it comes under the Nyaya Grantha, logic. So what is mentioned, what is taught in the Shrutis, in the Upanishads, in the Shrutis, there is a lot of logic that goes behind the scriptures. And the Brahma Sutra is a very big text explaining in excruciating detail the logical analysis for pretty much everything that is said earlier. And like I said, these three categories of granthas are studied the most because we have Shankaracharya's commentary on it. And besides these three categories, we have many independent texts. And these independent texts are called Prakarana Granthaha. They usually focus on one aspect of the three pillars of Vedanta. And quiz, anybody who's coming here who studied the Bhagavad Gita, what are the three pillars of Vedanta? The answer is on the board, sorry. Yeah, that is another way to classify. But Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. So these texts, these independent texts can be categorized based on what their focus is. So we have the Shravana Granthaha, Shravana texts meant for, which give kind of basic definitions, basic introductory concepts of what is written in the Upanishads of the Veda, of the Vedantas, and texts like Tattva Bodha, Viveka Chudamani. Then we have the Manana Granthas. Mananam is a very important aspect of our study. Unlike many other non-Hindu religions or non-Eastern religions, where you are given a scripture and told you just have to believe it, you just have to follow it blindly. What if that doesn't work for you? For example, if you're born a Christian and you're told you have to follow the Bible to the T, but there are aspects of it that don't work for you. Of course, I mean, in modern culture, you can choose to study another religion, but what if that is what you've grown up with? What choice do we have? If you are not able to question the religion, question aspects of the text. And Mananam is a very important part of our scriptures because all the Upanishads are really in the form of question and answers. So the teacher is teaching and the student or the disciple is listening and asking questions. So the clarification of any doubts that come up or anything that you're not, you kind of, don't have a clear understanding of get answered through this process of mananam. And there are texts like Advaita Makaranda and Advaita Siddhi, which are meant for this mananam. There are a lot of questioning. There are a lot of logical analysis, logical explanations given in the answers for our questions. And finally, we have texts for Nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam, as you might know, is loosely translated as assimilation. In Nididhyasanam, you don't really learn anything new. It is basically meant for dwelling on the facts that you already know, dwelling on the teachings that you've heard through Shravanam. So knowledge actually takes place at the stage of Shravanam. How long does it take to know 2 plus 2 is equal to 4? Is it? You're going to doubt. Is 2 plus 2 equal to 4? In your sleep, if someone wakes you up and says, how much is 2 plus 2? Because it has gone in so deeply. So Nididhyasana is really meant for re-examining or looking at what you already know with a different pair of eyes. Is this what I know? Is what I have heard, what I have studied, how real is that for me? How much of it resonates with me? And is it my reality? So we continue. Nididhyasana is not a one-time thing. Just like Shravana and Manana of the Bhagavad Gita or any other text should not, I don't like to use the word should, but I will use it, should not be a one-time thing, one-time study. Nididhyasanam is an ongoing part, aspect of our study. Until how long do we need to continue doing the Nididhyasana? Till we rest in peace. Till you really understand that what the Upanishads is saying, talking about our true nature, till we get it in so deeply that just as if you're woken up in your sleep and ask 2 plus 2 is equal to 4, just as in when you are in the middle of a very difficult situation of chronic illness, of terminal illness, of on your deathbed, it should have gone in so much that you're not suffering, you're not struggling. And sorry to bring in a little harsh concept on this first class, but this is what we are here for. So there are a whole bunch of many other texts in the Vedantic, in the literature, Hindu literature. We have the Vedangas, Veda Anga, six limbs of Vedas, additional or auxiliary texts. And these include, so somebody who is studying, you know, in the olden days when a child was sent to the Gurukulam to study with the teacher, a child of maybe 7-8 years old, they end up studying for till they're, you know, old enough to get married, and in those days it was 12, 15 years, 20 years, whatever. So they're studying in the Gurukulam for such a length of time. Besides the Upanishads and the Prasthana Trayam, they're also learning these auxiliary scriptures. And these include things like Shiksha, which is phonetics. How do you pronounce? Of course, all the texts are in Sanskrit. So for those of you who know the Sanskrit language, you know how hard it can be. Chandas, which is prosody or meter. A lot of the texts were in poem form, poetry, verse form, for easy memorization. So how do you chant the verse correctly? What meter is used? Vyakarana, grammar. Without the basics of Sanskrit grammar, you're not going to be able to read any text. Nirukta, which is etymology. How are different words derived in the language? What is the derivation? Kalpa. Kalpa is the instructions given on how to perform different karmas, different rituals, different karmas. And Jyotisha, it's not astrology, according to most misnamed astrology, in the real strict sense. Jyotisha is really telling you what karma needs to be done when. It's not predicting your future, but it's really telling us what are, based on the planetary position, what is a good time to do particular karma. Then we have the itihasas, or the epics, and you all have heard of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. And there are Puranas. There are 18 major Puranas. Puranas are mainly stories, but stories which give us the same teachings as we see in the Shrutis. It's given in a story form only because all of us are very different in our capacity and have different needs for different kinds of teaching. So if a Shruti is taught, if an Upanishad is taught to somebody who doesn't know Sanskrit or who doesn't perhaps have the inclination for learning these lofty truths in the highest form, I wouldn't say the Puranas are watered down. They are the same teachings, but they come in story form. And it's interesting because when you teach children, most of you have kids, so when you teach them a song or a story, and then you ask the key message of that, they are more likely to remember it because it's in a story form. They can probably relate to that story better, and we are all children in some sense. So Puranas are talking about teachings with stories. And then there are the category of texts called Upavedas, mainly include Ayurveda, which is the text for Indian medicine, and Dhanurveda, text for archery. And these texts were important for people living in society. You know, people are not living in isolation. These the archery, obviously, important for the princely caste, princely class, or the kings, for warfare, for protection. And then a whole bunch of shastras and sutras meant for, again, making society a better place to live, helping us develop our bhakti, our devotion. So we have dharma shastras talking about what is the right thing, arthashastra, how do you gain securities, how do you gain pleasures, yoga sutras, you've heard of, shilpa shastra, the temple architecture. There are designed specific rules laid down for how a temple should be constructed. I think, is that Vastu Shastra they have for homes? You know, when you're building a new home, you're looking at different directions, which is the most auspicious, which will be the most beneficial for the family living in there. Natya Shastra, dance. Bharatnatyam really began in the temples. Bharatnatyam and many of these classical dances began in the temples because the dance was offered to God, as the performer was offering his or her appreciation of the world to God. So many texts are there, and these were not very easy to write in ancient times. Remember, there was no laptop, there was no this. There was no word processors, no typewriters also. And all these texts had to be written on palm leaves, were written on palm leaves. And to do that was very labor intensive. First, they would need to collect the leaves, dry them, cure them, polish them, then using a sharp metal object or a wooden stick, they'd have to etch the letters onto the palm leaf. Then after the etching was over, they needed to rub the palm leaf with soot or oil so that the grooves stand out on the grooves, so that the grooves would get filled and the letters would stand out. And then finally bind these leaves into a grantha or a book. If you see on the display on the board there, it said Sanskrit manuscripts. In the framed, when you leave, just go and take a look. Those are original palm leaves, but I think they're not, they're in a different, not Sanskrit, but in a different lipi. So imagine, and there's no delete button, right, on palm script. So imagine if you were at the end of a text or end of a palm leaf, came to the last word and found out there was a typo. You'd have to start the whole process again. So it was not easy writing a text. So it's not surprising that somebody who was interested in writing a text would really need to have to make a lot of effort and would really need to want to write that. Wanting is one thing, but would he or she be capable of writing a text? So unlike today, where we write one or two lines and then call ourselves a poet or an author, in those days it was very, very difficult to do that. So there were certain criteria that were required for writing a text, and these are called Anubandha Chatushtaya. Chatushtaya, four Anubandha requirements or connections, and it's given by this, there's a sutra, shloka to that describes what this was. Adhikari cha vishayaha sambandha sa prayojanaha shastra ramba phalam prahuhu anubandha chatushtayam. So prahuhu, they say, or it is said, shastra aramba phalam, for the successful beginning of a shastra, of a text, or writing of a text, anubandha chatushtayam. Chatushtayam, there are fourfold anubandhas, requirements. And what are they? Vishayaha, the subject matter. Obviously, if you are, the author needs to know what he or she is writing, right? If I want to write a text on microbiology, but I start writing on quantum physics, which I have no idea at all about, the text is not going to be read much at all. The prayojana, what is the benefit or what is the result of the text? Adhikari, who is a qualified person? Who has studied, who is qualified to study the text? Who is the text being written for? And these qualifications are the prerequisites that a student needs to be able to read the text. And we'll talk about that in later verses. And then finally, sambandha. Sambandha is the connection or the relationship between the text and its subject matter. So like I said, if I want to write a text on microbiology, but I write on quantum physics, there's no connection between the two. So these were the four requirements for someone to write a text. So the text we are going to take up for this study is called Prashnottara Ratnamalika. It's a compound word. Most of these compound, long compound words, you get the meaning by reading them right to left. Malika is same as mala, a garland or a necklace. Of what? Ratnas, of precious stones. And what kind of stones? What are the stones? Prashna Uttara. Prashna means question. Of course, I think in Malayalam and Tamil, Prashna also means like a problem. We could take it as a problem because this addresses a lot of the problems we face in our life. But here, the literal meaning is a question and Uttara, answer. So the beauty of this text is that both the question and answer are in a shloka form. And this is very difficult to write because you have to be very precise in when you write a verse. It's not like writing prose. There are a few versions of this text for those of you who are interested. There is a Chinmaya Mission version of this text. We are not using that. Those verses are slightly different. The essence they convey might be the same, but the verses are not what is more traditionally studied or attributed to Shankaracharya. So our version of the text is from one printed by the Tirupati Devasthanam. The Shankaracharya of Kanchi Matha had requested Tirupati Devasthan. Tirupati is the, you know, the temple in the south, famous temple in the south. He had requested them to print this text. So we are going to be studying that version of the Prashnottara Ratnamalika. There is also a book that is published by text has been taught by Pujya Swamiji. I don't know when because it doesn't give details, but there is a book transcribed, a book that has been transcribed with his explanations available. I don't know if it's available, but this is published by the Arshavidya AVPRT, Arshavidya Research Publication Trust. They are the ones who print a lot of Pujya Swamiji's and Swami Paramarthananda's and other teachers' texts. And there is an English translation that is published by a Jagannatha Vallabha Vedic Research Center. That text, that translation is a little out there. It doesn't fall in Asampradaya, but you're welcome to get it and read it if you want. So they were, even though the first slide said Adi Shankaracharya at the bottom, the authorship is not quite 100% sure. We're not 100% sure that it is. It is attributed to Shankara, but like many, many other texts which are attributed to Shankaracharya, the authors or the students who wrote the text were so humble that they did not want their names to be on the text, and they would attribute the text to their guru. So Adi Shankaracharya became, in that way, he got, a lot of texts got attributed to him. And this is a preparatory text for study of Vedanta. Some questions and some answers are very Vedantic, but some are just kind of common sense answers, so you're going to get a mix of them. So what is the Anubandha Chatushtaya? What are the fourfold requirements for this text? First is the Vishaya. What is the subject matter? The main subject matter is Dharma. And we'll talk about Dharma in elaborate detail in another class. But it also talks about growth, psychological growth, growth of the society, growth of the individual, growth of the family. And these this subject matter is covered in 67 verses, about 180 to 200 question and answers. Prayojanam, what is the benefit? We all want to know what is it and what is it for me? What do I get out of it? I mean, it's a valid question, though it sounds very American. It is, if it's something that you don't get anything out of, you're not going to be spending your time studying or coming here on a Saturday to study the class. So what do I get out of it? Have any of you ever had a conflict in your life? Ever? 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 For those of you who've not raised your hands, I'm a little suspicious. Small conflicts doesn't even have to be big conflict. How about small decisions? When you wake up in the morning, if you have to decide what breakfast to eat, simple things, silly thing. If you are looking for a new job and you have to decide which job, you've got two offers, which job to take, conflict. If you have somebody who is terminally ill and has to be put on hospice care, big decision to make. So we all have conflicts in our lives. How do we feel? You know, little conflicts like breakfast is silly, but the bigger conflicts in life, how do we feel when we have to deal with them? How do we feel when we have to handle them? It's not easy. Usually it's a lot of strife, lot of upheavals, and especially in a family situation. Every member of the family will have a different opinion. That's the nature of the game. So this text will help us deal with our conflicts, will help us decide what breakfast cereal to eat, but gives us the capacity to make the right decision. It will help us deal with our, and as we grow older, conflicts are going to come there, be more. It's going to help us know what the right thing to do is. Adhikari, the next Anubandha Chatushtaya, who is eligible? Are we all humans? Yes, you're a human being. Though sometimes our behavior might not be like human beings. And that's actually an insult to the animal. So we're human beings, eligibility. First eligibility, you have to be a human being. Are you committed to growth? Are you committed to bettering yourself? Are you committed to having a better, peaceful life? And are you willing to have Shraddha? Shraddha, of course, is not blind belief. Are you willing to put aside your blind, quote-unquote, blind beliefs and be open to the fact that, hey, this text is going to teach me something that is going to be of value to me, that is going to be useful in my life? If you have these, you're an adhikari. And then Sambandha, what is the connection between the text and its subject matter? So this text is broadly based on Sanatana Dharma, on the on the Vedic Vedic on the scriptures. It's specific to Manushya Dharma, specific to humans, and the reason being, actually, I'll come to that later. So its emphasis, it's specific to human beings, but its emphasis is on the. You've heard of the four stages ashrama system in Hindus, the brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi. So it's specifically geared to the brahmachari and grihastha stages of our life, the student and the householder stages of our life, because it deals with a lot of issues that come up in these stages. I know there are many vanaprasthas, retired people here, but I think even if you're retired, you're probably living in grihastha ashrama only, unless you're able to completely detach yourself from the family, which is quite a difficult task to do. So it's meant for you too. And I don't see any sannyasis in the room, but we're okay with that. So the emphasis of this text is on dharma. Because humans alone, and it's, I said manushya for humans, because humans alone are empowered, are endowed with free will, with the capacity to choose. We can choose in every action. We can choose to act, we can choose not to act, we can choose to act in a particular way, we can choose to act in a different way. Animals don't have this capacity. They are very pre-programmed, so they don't have the free will. And this word dharma, we're going to talk a lot about this word dharma, but just in our shastras, many of you have heard of the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. They start with dharma, but usually it's taken in a different order. So we start with kama. Kama means pleasures, desires. We all have desires. Those who have not raised your hand, again, suspicious. So we all have desires. Yeah, two hands. We all have desires. That's kama, and that's a normal human condition. Many teachers, unfortunately, make the mistake of telling their students, you should not have desires. How is that possible? How is that possible? And without giving how, without telling you how. Hopefully we'll cover some of that in our classes, and Swamiji has of course covered it in his classes. So we have a lot of desires. For fulfilling a desire, we need some means. So if you have a desire to go to a movie theater and watch some latest and greatest movie out there, you need to pay, I don't know how much, I've never been to a movie theater in decades. How much, 10 bucks? 32? Senior discount. Senior discount is 13 to 18. But then you have to have, remember, all the popcorn and the candy and everything else that comes. So it's some money. So you need to have the means. You need to have the money to have that desire fulfilled. And that is security, artha. Then the third word in the Purushartha is dharma. Dharma in this context of the Purusharthas is taken as... So you have securities in this life. Dharma is all the securities, the punya you're collecting for the next life. So all the rituals you do, the rituals that you do to gain that security. But for the context of the text that we're going to be studying, dharma means doing the right thing, the dharmic way. And finally, the fourth goal is moksha, or freedom. It's not something that you gain, quote-unquote gain. We'll see that in a little bit. It's something that you recognize through the study of Vedanta. So we all don't need to increase our karmas and our arthas. We don't need to increase, learn. We don't need to learn to increase. How do we increase our desires? And how do we... Well, maybe you can learn how to increase your wealth. You know, do the right investment, whatever. But we need to know how to be dharmic. And we can learn that. It is... Dharma needs to be cultivated. It's a skill. It's a learning to be cultivated. And how do we do that? With Shraddha, with that... Not blind devotion. I think Swamiji defines it as faith pending verification. Belief pending verification. Bhakti, any devotional practice that you do. And then, of course, Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. All these will help us lead a more dharmic life. So, hold on to your seats as we go into the text proper. So the PDF version of these texts are available on our website. Thanks to Pinky for formatting, tediously formatting all these slides. In the class recordings, I will have some additional slides that are not there on the PDF. So the PDF slides are only slides of the text, whereas I put an extra material just so that it's easy for. See, if you're particular in knowing what they are, you can always go back to the recording and revisit the recording, which will be available on YouTube. So this text is in a different, is in an unusual meter. Chandas that we spoke about earlier, most meters are based on the number of syllables. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, we have the Anushtup meter, which has four quarters, four padas of eight syllables each. So the very first word of the Bhagavad Gita, dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveta yuyutsava. So my fingers are not moving in line. So there are eight syllables. That's called the Anushtub meter. We also have a longer meter in the Bhagavad Gita, the Trishtub, which is 11 by 4. So the Anushtub, I remember, 8 by 4. Eight syllables, each pada, four padas, and the Trishtub is the longer meter, 11 by 4. So the verse, the longer verse, like, Najayate mriyate vakadachit, so 11 syllables. This Prashnottara Ratna Malika is in a different meter. It's called the Arya meter, and it's different because it's not based on the number of syllables, but it's based on the length of the syllable. So in Sanskrit, there are short letters and long, short vowels and long vowels, like a and ah. So when you pronounce them, you're taking twice the time. And it's a little complex meter because it has short and long alterations. And it has four padas, but the first quarter has 12 syllables, the second has 18, the third has 12, and the fourth has 15. So because of this, it's more complex and more difficult to chant. This meter, Arya meter or Arya Vritta meter, I think it's called, is very common in Jaina scriptures, Jain Prakrit. So they use this quite a lot. For our purposes, we'll only chant the first verse. The remainder verses we'll see as prose because they are all in the form of question answers. So we'll see that as a prose. So you can listen and repeat.
Kah khalu nalang kriyate, kah khalu nalang kriyate, drishtar drishtartha sadhana patiyan, drishtar drishtartha sadhana patiyan, amuya kanta sthitaya, amuya kanta sthitaya, prashnotara ratna malikaya, prashnotara ratna malikaya.
So it begins with kaha khalu na alankriyate. So kaha, who, khalu indeed, na alankriyate. Alankara is to adorn or to decorate. So who indeed, khalu is indeed or in fact, who would not want to be adorned or decorated? Decorated by what? Prashnotara ratnamalika. By this garland or necklace, we saw the word before, malikaya, instrumental case, with this garland of precious stones. These precious stones, some people think they have, you know, like gems, rubies and all have beneficial qualities, so you'll see people wear them, particular birthstone, their ring or a pendant or something. You may not subscribe to that view, and that's fine. But why are they precious stones? Because these are precious stones in the form of question and answers. And these question and answers are precious because they are valuable for us to gain wisdom and to live a conflict-free life. So who would not want to be adorned with this precious stoned mala or necklace of question and answers? And how? Amuya, how? In this manner, kantha sthitaya. Kantha means throat. Sthita means abiding in the throat or staying in the throat. So that which is, it is abiding or staying in the throat, meaning it's readily available for us to recite. And for us to recite it readily available, of course, in ancient times, everything was memorized so that it is readily available. Also, a necklace is worn around the neck, throat. So that is a secondary meaning. It's an ornament. This Prashnotara Ratna Malika is an ornament of our speech, of our voice. And it's worn close to the neck. And why would you want to do this? Going up to the second line. Drishta Adrishta Artha Sadhana Patiyan. Patiyan empowers us, or it is the best. Best what? Sadhana means for what? To gain, where is that? Drishtaphala, seen results, and adrishtaphala, unseen results, meaning punya and papa. Now, many of you have watched or know about the law of karma, and I've heard Puja Swamiji say that any action has four kinds of results, two seen results and two unseen. And he gives the example of catching a bus. Anybody not know that example? Okay, many of you don't. So the idea is if you are going to the bus stop to catch a bus, four possible outcomes. One, you go to the bus stop, the bus comes, expected result. Second, you get less than what you expected. So you go to the bus stop and the bus is pulling away. Third, you get more than what you expected. You go to the bus stop and a friend drives by in a car and says, hey, hop into my car, I'll give you a ride. You don't have to go in the bus. That's the fourth. And opposite of what you expected. Yeah, but this is worse than that. So you can wait for the next bus. So you're going to the bus stop, crossing the road, and you get knocked off by a car. You end up in a hospital. So I thought I'll give a little updated version of my own example, see if this helps you. So if you're making upma, upma is this cream of wheat dish, very popular in all of India. So, you're following a recipe. Expected result, you get exactly what the recipe says. Less than what is expected, you add less spices, less salt, whatever. It doesn't taste quite as much, quite as good. More than what you expected, you follow the recipe and you post it on social media. And you get a million views. So more than what you expected. And opposite of what you expected, instead of adding salt, you add sugar. So what you end up with is shira. Or Gujarati upma, I call it. No disrespect to the Gujaratis. I love Gujarati food. So these are the possible outcomes for any action that we do. And we're going to stop here because it's going to be... I have another couple of verses. But like I said, I never know how much it's going to... how much I'm going to cover. So just to remind you that this text that we're going to study is really going to teach us how we can do the right thing in difficult situations. And that is very important because many times, you know, of course, when you are in a conflict, you talk to family members, which sometimes is not the best option because family members come with their own baggage, their own biases. You talk to somebody like a friend, maybe who can be more objective. You talk to a guru who can be very objective. But we have the teachings in this text. So I'm hoping you will all continue to come for this class. And we will end with our prayers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Thank you all for coming. Swamiji will be here in a few minutes.